welcome to Wildlife Rehabilitation from Rescue to Release, a podcast dedicated to licensed wildlife rehabilitators and the veterinarians who support them. I'm your host, Gail Buell.
Techniques we discuss here are meant for licensed wildlife professionals. If you aren't licensed and trained for wildlife rehabilitation, do not attempt to capture, hold, or rehabilitate any wild animal. If you find an injured wild animal, a wildlife professional can recommend next steps. We will tackle topics about rescue, care, management, reconditioning, and releasing wildlife found in North America. This is a deep dive into each subject. We hope to give rehabilitators information they can use because they're already going to great lengths to rescue and nurse animals back to health. There are three possible outcomes in wildlife rehabilitation: release, euthanasia, and placement. An injured or orphaned wild animal's journey to restored health and independence in their natural habitat is delicate and complex. We draw techniques and expertise from many disciplines. Many animals brought into rehabilitation cannot be saved. The last gift we can give them is humane euthanasia. We'll talk more about when this is necessary. Sometimes animals are deemed non-releasable and evaluated to be suitable for a life in captivity. When that happens, we shift to a long-term approach to managing their care, training, and housing. Some such animals serve as ambassador animals, a term for animals that rehabilitators use to educate the public. Each episode, we'll speak with experts who represent specialty topics across the profession of wildlife rehabilitation, ambassador animal care and management, showcasing best practices. Hi, everyone. I have the absolute pleasure of having a conversation today with Rachel Avila from Wormd. And Wormd, I'm not going to tell you what that is quite yet, but Wormd is an electronic database for wildlife rehabilitators. So I'm very excited to get into this conversation. So Rachel, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, awesome. Wondering if you could tell everybody, before we kind of get into the database nuts and bolts kind of thing, what's your background? How did you get to this point where you're working with this database?
Never thought I would be here growing up. I was definitely not, I'm going to be a database manager. But I was always into animals growing up. I was an environmental science student in college in sort of like the Bay Area in California. And I started working my last year of college, I became an intern. I first interned at Santa Rosa Bird Rescue Center for the summer. And then after that, I discovered that near me was Lindsay Wildlife Museum, where I was going to school. And I started interning there about 20 years ago. So I've been basically doing wildlife rehabilitation on and off, you know, manually, I guess you could say, for 21 years. And I started interning at Lindsay Wildlife Museum, where I met Devin, my husband and partner in the Wild Neighbors Database Project. And we have been, you know, working there. We were working there for about 10 years. And that's where we kind of started, we started dating, and later we got married and we started Wormd right at the end of our, you know, tenure at Lindsay Wildlife Museum. After that, I went to Belize Bird Rescue for a couple years and worked there as the manager. And after that, when Wormd really started picking up, I wasn't able to do wildlife rehabilitation as much anymore. I was managing this database. And so I would volunteer for friends. So I would volunteer for Veronica Bowers at Songbird Care and Conservation. And I would go to Pacific Wildlife Care, where Dr. Shannon Riggs and Van Mastholz, you know, I'd just volunteer with friends that needed help for like a week or something like that. And that's really like, it's just sort of, you know, progressed. I was a volunteer manager. I never thought I'd be doing database entry, but for some reason it just sort of worked and fit. And I have a very detailed sort of like, I see chaos and I want to like put it into little boxes so that it makes sense for my own brain. And that seems to be sort of like a database skill. Take chaos and put it into little sections so you can do it. And so, yeah. And so Devin and I have been working on you know, the Wild Neighbors Database Project. I am the, you know, co-founder, president, and project manager. And the Wild Neighbors Database Project, one of our projects is Wormed. So we have a couple other projects that we work on. We have OWormed, which is the oiled wildlife rehabilitation medical database. We have Wild Alert, which does the wildlife disease surveillance. And, you know, we have other projects coming up and working on all the time. So we discovered that Wormed was just the beginning.
It's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I certainly find that, because I ask this question a lot, what's your origin story, right? Is that it seems to be a pretty crooked road to get to where you are now. But it is great to hear your background, which I did not know, because it really kind of sets you up for this this database, I feel, because of the experience that you have going into it. Not only as a volunteer, but as a manager and like a lot of different levels of wildlife rehabilitation. So let's get into a little bit about the database. And I'm going to wait for you to define Wormed quite, not quite yet. I knew that. I just find it fascinating. I love the acronym. I love the by the way. Don't worry. We will put it in the show notes. Rachel's showing it to me now. We'll put it in the show notes so everybody has a chance to see it. It's great. But I want to talk a little general first. Why do you think databases in general, electronic databases, are important?
Yeah, there's a couple. Well, there's lots of reasons why they're important. But one, and what really got Devin and I really excited about it, was that we realized that our mentors were aging out of the field. And it was so important to collect their knowledge in some sort of form that was usable. And so that was the number one thing, is just having that sort of historical knowledge somewhere that we can compare to or reach back to, and also just have access to. After they left, that was it. So I think that's one of the big benefits, is that there's that historical knowledge from the people that came before us, and we can only learn more from, you know, from that knowledge, and so that we don't backtrack. For one. And I'd say it's also really important because it makes it really easy for wildlife rehabilitators to analyze the results of their processes, so that they can be informed to find out what's working and what's not. So if they notice they change a diet, and then they can look back at their stats and they can say, well, that diet actually didn't do so well because actually we had less survival rate than we did with the previous diet. Or, you know, just the diseases that were breaking out that year, you can actually follow through, like who was in what cage when, is this cage like contaminated? You know, you can actually analyze what's happening and be able to improve upon what's going on. And with paper records, you just can't do that. You can't analyze it easy enough without somebody literally sitting down at the computer, working on Excel spreadsheets and entering the data. It's just not possible. So we hope that would increase the survival rate and the health of wildlife rehabilitators and their animals. I think also it's the first time that we're able to have, you know, like a collective knowledge shared across our entire community that's standardized, so that we can actually communicate to one another. Because even if your ages are different, like you can't communicate, you know, the data across regions or even across other facilities if you can't speak the same language and compare it. So by being able for our community to have a standardized communication system, we can look at the data in a broader view and actually understand what's happening nationally, internationally, and even to the small extent, like statewide and region-wide, so that we can inform ourselves and know how best to like go forward and to, you know, do outreach and inform our public about what's going on, including our agencies. So I think that's sort of, you know, what happens in rehab. It's a big part of One Health, you know, so what happens in wildlife happens in livestock and happens in people. And wildlife, a lot of times, are the first, you know, are the first spot that something's going to happen. You know, they're the canary in the coal mine. So being able to identify that quickly, you know, hopefully we can, you know, help with the processes of One Health and see what's really going on a broader scale.
Right. And just for full disclosure for everybody is that I'm on Wormed. And I really, really, really like it as a database. I don't have nearly as many animals come into my personal rehabilitation as a lot of facilities do, but I find that getting on an electronic database, well, the amount of animals I get in, 50 or so, doesn't seem like it would make a difference here, there, or anywhere, right? But in reality, because of some of the stuff that you just said, the animals that I get in are relevant. They are relevant. They're relevant to what's happening locally, to where I'm getting the animals in, but it also is part of the whole, right? I mean, hundreds of thousands of animals are rehabilitated in the United States alone. And to me, those are data points. And, you know, if we just have them on paper records, that's where they stay. Because the most states, I can't speak for all states, but most state permitting organizations, you send in your annual report and then it kind of stays there. It doesn't, most places that I know of just don't, they don't use that information. Some I'm sure do, but most do not. So this is a way that we can really kind of keep the, keep rehabilitation relevant and viable and all of those kinds of things. So when I am looking, and I'm not going to tell you what I went through to kind of figure out what database, because there's a few out there for wildlife rehabilitation. What kinds of features, if I was in the market today, what kind of features should I be looking for to decide on a database?
Well, I think, especially for our field, simple and easy, because you don't want anything that makes your life more difficult. It should be the minimum number of fields that you need to record individually. It should be flexible for what your needs are. If you're only doing 50 animals, you may not need nearly as many of the features as, say, someone that's doing 10,000 animals. Right. You know, so we want to make it as easy as possible for, you know, people in their garages doing maybe 100 animals a year and then being used by giant organizations, universities. So, you know, simple, easy, flexible, allowed to grow, but not required to use everything all at once, so that you can learn it over time. I think, you know, the thing that we've learned, and I think this is where, you know, both Devin and I have a lot of experience, is that, you know, we understand our community, and we understand that databases should work hard, not the people. Mm-hmm. Our people are working so hard just trying to feed babies, you know, do the medications, keep everybody clean. Like, you should not have to work hard at recording the information. That's not, like, as important as that is compared to trying to keep a baby or a, you know, an ICU animal alive is not as important, you know, like,
right,
the database, you know, that's important. So mm-hmm. being able to just have that sort of flexibility, I think, is really important. Standardization, I think, also across the board. So again, looking at it on a sort of larger scale, you know, having too much customization is not a good thing. Having some customization, because someone that's doing sloths and someone that turtles is going to have very different needs, and that's great. And there's, you know, sloth people have to record the algae on the fur, and turtle people have to record the carapace length, and, you know, so they need stuff. But if you start changing ages, or you start changing some of the, like, critical information that identifies that animal, then you'd kind of explode that whole standardization. So having some customization, but not too much. Mm-hmm. I also feel that, you know, having pretty good customer service is good. We try really hard. We actually recently hired someone to help us do customer service because we've gotten so big. But just being able to walk people through, talk to people, go to their organizations, visit with them, go to conferences, sit there and talk to people, I think is really what makes a huge difference because they learn, they grow, they use the database better, they make it easier for themselves. I've been answering questions every day of my life for, you know, 10 years. And so I think, you know, being able to have that sort of accessibility to somebody if you need help is important. Mm-hmm. And I'd say lastly, you know, knowing the people maybe that are doing it. And I think we've built up some level of trust in the community that we're here for the wildlife rehabilitators and we're not going to sell their data. We're not going to like abuse them. And so I feel like we're, you know, we want to be able to use that data in a way that's going to be beneficial for everybody, but not, you know, not in a way that it's going to upset anybody or, you know, be bad, you know, in any case. So I think also some level of trustworthiness with the database that's kind of been around for a while. It's like anything, you want to use a database maybe that's been around for a while, people like it, you know, and it seems to work.
Right. Yeah. You just a beautiful segue, because I was going to ask if like if I had concerns about privacy, for example. Mm-hmm. And I think you've answered some of it, but I don't know if you want to expand on that. How do you work with that? Privacy of the finder, privacy of, you know, my data. I mean, how does that work?
Privacy is really important. We take it very seriously. There's different levels of privacy. So the first one is the privacy of the personal identifiable information, which is basically all the rescuer information. And that is protected about as well as anything else in the database. There are permissions and authorizations within WORM that will allow users access or not have access to that information, just in case there's some sort of, you don't want some lower level interns that, you know, you don't want them to have everyone's contact information. We never, ever share that information. It is locked down. We don't touch it. It doesn't go anywhere. So that's actually like a part of our legislation in the US, and actually different countries have different rules. So we have to pay attention to the different countries and their rules when it comes to personal identifiable information. So that's about as secure as we can get it. As far as, you know, just the overall data, this interesting topic, and it's actually a conversation because it's still sort of confusing to some extent. Where does the public data of, you know, what we're doing is sort of public, and a lot of the animals are state and or federally owned. And so a lot of that is actually open source, where some of it, you reach the line of like actual treatments and medications and all that kind of stuff is sort of like private property, or, you know, it's more private. So we kind of see it as like anything that is very identifiable to an organization that like kind of expresses their, you know, treatment and the way they do things is also, it's never shared. It's locked down. You can share it within yourself as an organization to another organization if you want to, but that information is never going to go anywhere. The only thing that we have looked at is sort of like deep aggregate information. So basically like what species is it, you know, the general location of where it came from, first initial finding, why did it come in, and maybe like the diagnosis. And that sort of information is like this incredibly valuable, powerful source that we've found. And it doesn't identify anything to anybody, you know, like it's in aggregate. So it's not locked down on, you know, this animal came from here and, you know, they're getting a lot of these animals, but it's this aggregate sort of neutral source of data that doesn't use anybody, you know, doesn't, sure. At least as far as what we've found, it doesn't use anybody, but it has given wildlife rehabilitators some really awesome powers in the past couple of years.
Oh, right. I agree. I mean, the potential and actual is really exciting. Really exciting. Thank you. Thank you for that explanation. We've talked a little bit about how a database like this would help wildlife rehabilitators. How does a database like this, and maybe it doesn't, help wildlife populations at large?
Yeah, so that's something that, you know, we never Well, when we first started, we thought, well, maybe someday if there's enough data and it works, then maybe someday we'll get to this point where we can look at the larger picture. And, you know, we've discovered that we've got there. We have nearly 3 million records, you know, throughout the world. And it's like, well, this is a huge data source. So what can we do with this? And, you know, even out it just within the organization and how it can help rehab. You know, we've had a couple examples of people tell us that, like, you know, what's amazing to them is that, like, Fish and Wildlife or Department of Conservation or whoever that entity is in that state, or, you know, even federally, will come to an organization and say, hey, do you have any information on, like, animals that have been shot and where they're coming from? You know, and they're just like, you know, yes, I can find that. I got my computer in front of me. I'm on the phone with you right now. I can find that data really quick. Mm-hmm. And then that can inform, you know, our agencies where there might be potential issues, or even, you know, brown pelicans that are coming in with slashes in their pouches or anything like that. The information is quick, it's handy, and it can be, you know, shared with our agencies so that they can do their job, and, you know, then we can help them. I think on a large scale, and where we have started to work, actually, we've been doing this for quite a while now, is our other program, which I was mentioning, Wild Alert, which really is quite amazing in sort of its capability and what it's doing. But basically, we started in California. Our Fish and Wildlife liaison recognized what we were doing, and, you know, she would say it would take me 2 years to compile all the data from all the annual reports. And by then it was completely, it was informative, but there was nothing we could do about it. Mm-hmm. And so what we started working with the state of California, and then we had participating wildlife rehabilitation organizations participating. And we also worked a little bit with UC Davis on this. And because we're from California and everyone knew us, this was, like, probably a good pilot, you know, starting ground for this. And we started to develop Wild Alert. At the time, it was called Wildlife Morbidity and Mortality Event Alert System. And we realized it was WMMEAS. It was a bit of a mouthful. So we recently changed it to Wild Alert. It's a little easier to say. And we started a pilot project to see if this would even work. But basically, we've taken, you know, aggregate data. We've been able to identify, you know, using AI machine learning and tagging why animals come in, standardizing why animals come in and what's happening to them and diagnosing them. We're able to find trends from past data and current data, and actually find near real-time data of, I'll use brown pelicans as an example. This year, or like this week, we expect no more than 7 brown pelicans to come in. And this is from, like, 5 years of past data trends. Mm-hmm. If there is more than that, and more brown pelicans that come in than 7, maybe it's more like 10, somebody is going to get an alert. That's going to be like, there's more brown pelicans than we expect. Something may be going on. And then somebody can investigate that. Sure. And it's the same thing where you can actually add on symptoms. So we are getting this week of this year, we expect to get 25 raccoons in throughout California, throughout these organizations that are participating, mm-hmm. and 20 raccoons that maybe have neurological symptoms, okay. normal distemper outbreak, or, you know, mm-hmm. rabies on the other coast. But no, we're getting 30 this week of neuro symptoms. Something is going on. Right. And then we can look at that data. And so far, it's been able to identify multiple outbreaks of, you know, not only normal outbreaks that happen within, like, pines. For us, it's like pine siskins with salmonella, or, you know, raccoons with canine distemper. But it has found emerging diseases. So there was a fungus, a really nasty fungal disease in snakes that was found. And it was one snake with a fungus, and that was like an alert. what was it? An alert. There was also, we discovered pigeon paramyxovirus in the collared doves, which was a new emerging disease in California. Mm-hmm. So not only is it identifying, you know, you know, trends that are normal, but obviously an outbreak is happening, but also emerging diseases, because there's unusual, you know, animals coming in, the numbers are higher, they're showing certain symptoms. So it's a pre-diagnostic tool to sort of inform on what's going on with wildlife health. And what that can do for wildlife rehabilitators is, like, they don't have to do anything different, but they're starting to be recognized as a very valuable tool for health department, for, you know, fish and wildlife, and, you know, for One Health. And if we are starting to get recognized, then that gives us some power and leeway to, you know, have standing in this sort of community and in this research. And hopefully we can get, you know, either more donations or more support, or, you know, something of those along those lines. Right. So because of COVID-19, it's even more relevant than it used to be. So any emerging diseases, they're really looking at, you know, emerging diseases and what's happening and how states' capabilities of identifying these. And we've just kind of slipped right in because we're already doing it with wildlife. Wow. We're already doing it. So it's been a really hot topic for the past couple of years, and wildlife rehabilitators in particular, and their data is really starting to get recognized. So.
Excellent. Wow. Yes. Wow. I absolutely fascinated by that. I've always known, of course, and probably you too, that wildlife rehabilitation is relevant, and just, and you're proving just exactly how relevant it is, like that, just almost on the moment type of information is, like you said, very powerful, powerful. Well, why don't you tell everybody what WORM stands for? Because I love it.
WORM, Wildlife Rehabilitation Medical Database. Yeah. Very, very simple, but you know, we knew that our community would appreciate the WORMed, because, you know, people outside of rehab, they're like, why is it WORMed? Why is a WORMed your logo? You know, we have like a green bookworm. Why, you know, it's kind of like, no, you don't understand. Like, worms are part of our life. Like, either they're being fed out, or we're finding them, or they're like coming out of parts.
Exactly.
They're very relevant in our community. So that's, it just happened to, you know, work out pretty nice. And yeah, so I guess I can kind of go on about that. We started back in about, you know, 2010, 2011, Devin and I were like, we need to do something. He had been working on a FileMaker Pro database for Lindsay Wildlife Museum. And it was really difficult. Like, not only was it sort of older technology at the time, but it was had to be maintained, and someone had to maintain it. And if you didn't, you have to learn how to maintain it. And, you know, every time that person disappeared or was done, then you'd have this database that was like floating in space, and you had to teach someone else to maintain it. And it wasn't really useful to anybody else except for the organization itself. So we're like, we need to do something. And he self-taught himself software development, you know, back in that, you know, in like 2008, 9, 10, he was starting to work on that while doing wildlife rehabilitation. And we went out and talked to everyone that we could get our hands on, any organization. You know, I think we would go to conferences. Like, we were still pretty young. We were still like mid to late 20s when we were starting this work. So we wanted to understand what was working for people and what wasn't, what databases they use. We have a giant collection of paper records from so many different organizations so that we could kind of see how people were recording their data. And then we tried to, you know, use the most common methods and like kind of merge them all together. So that's kind of where WORMed started. And it oddly enough, at that time, you know, Devin was also doing websites, and he had done Lindsay Wildlife Museum's website. And Crow down in Sanibel Island was like, we really like your website. We want to hire you to do our website. And so Devin went to Crow for like a month and developed their website. And at that time, we were just getting ready to you know, have this database be piloted by somebody. So Crow and Sanibel, Lindsay had their own thing going, and they weren't exactly interested in piloting something. So Crow was actually the first one to pilot the database. And I think it was 2012. And they kind of helped us through the bumps and, like, you know, and so they were the first. And then we kind of expanded out a couple more the next year as still, like, you know, beta testing. And then by end of 2013, I think beginning of 2014, we really launched it and started, like, advertising it out to the world. So we've been around since, you know, we've been building it since that. So yeah, that's kind of where, and I think we developed Wormed before we even developed our nonprofit, the Wild Neighbors Database Project. So we've just, like, developed a system, and we're like, oh gosh, now we got to, like, do other business things.
Yeah, and so, figure out how to make sure it keeps going and funding.
Yeah,
all of that. Oh goodness. So one of the things when I was at the NWRA conference that I picked up from you guys was Wormed 4.0. So you're already on the fourth version.
Yeah.
Coming late 2023. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, basically, Wormed 4.0 is going to be taking care of all those little niggling bugs that people have had for the past couple of years that we just haven't been able to fix. But I think we've got a couple big features coming out. One is our daily tasks. You know, as we develop this, we're like, people are like, I need the database to do this. I need the database to do this. So we'd add these little features as people would need them, you know, and we thought they were a good addition. And we got to a point where the way that our reports and our prescriptions and our rechecks all work, they work together, but we've had to, like, force them to work together.
Okay.
And so daily tasks is going to be all of them working together smoothly. So, and we're adding in husbandry, which has been, like, one of the most difficult features for us to develop, because husbandry is so individualized and broad at the same time. Like, a hummingbird's needs are different than a bear's needs, and trying to make that generalized enough so that they can all do it has been our bane. And so it will be, we'll have husbandry, basically food, you know, diet and caging, as well as our rechecks and our prescriptions will all kind of be more centralized, talking together better, so that you can look for a day and see, okay, this animal needs this for the day, or all these animals in this room need this prescription for the day, which we already do. But generally, you want to know if an animal has a recheck and a prescription so that you can, you know, if you have to pull it out to give it a prescription, you're going to give it a recheck. So we're trying to make that all work together. And Devin's been doing a really good job on, like, really fleshing that out. And we have talked to many, many people over many years over, like, how they would do their husbandry and what that actually means. Like, is that what, you know, do you want to know when you have to clean the animal and how a cage is set up in Wormed, or is that just going to be on paper somewhere in a binder, or, you know, like, where is that sort of, this is just going to make life more complicated in the database when you really can do this outside of the database, or what is it that you want to record, you know, like, people often say, we want to go completely paperless. And our comment to that is, like, that's going to be really, really hard unless every single animal has an iPad. Like, I think there is a place for paper. And some of those diets and recording baby bird feedings, like, there's no point in recording that, you know, in the database. But recording, like, pelagic bird feedings, or, you know, if you're gavaging, that's really important information. It's almost more like a prescription. So we're working that out. I think, we have also sort of with 4.0, we've launched the oil spill extension. So we did, you know, for UC Davis and the Oiled Wildlife Care Network in California, we did a massive database for them, OWormed. And so we kind of dumbed it down a little bit so that it would work within Wormed. So if there's an oil, like, Tri-State's a really good example. Like, they do a lot of oil spill stuff. They don't need OWormed, but they just need a good way to record their oil spill stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we developed this with the help of Focus Wildlife, actually. And they are the first to kind of use it and pilot it and see how it works. And so we'll have that available. And there's, let's see. We also are going to have, this is something that's always been an issue because every state permits differently.
Yes.
Is that we are going to have sort of a way to have like a, we haven't figured out the best name for it, but like a master account and sub accounts. So you can have, Texas has, you know, issues with this. And I think Pennsylvania has issues with this, is that, or New York, is that there's one person that has the permit and, you know, they have some sub permittees that are doing it, but they also have their own permit. Like everyone has to have their own permit, but they're all trying to collect all the information in one spot, but they also have to report on their own. So what we're trying to do is have like a master account that helps manage all these little other accounts that also have to do their own reporting needs.
Wow.
And that they can all see the information in one spot, but it's kind of separated into individual accounts. So we're working on that. Because that's been a really big need. And
that's a huge need. It's a huge need.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, coming from California, we do it a certain way. And then when we were starting to learn about Texas and New York and these other accounts and how they, you know, these other states and how they have to do their permitting, we're like, okay, we've got to like make this a little bit more flexible. There are some other features. I can't think of them at the top of my head right now, but you know, it's going to be cleaned up a whole bunch. Usually we've discovered with technology, if you don't completely update your system every 4 years, you're just way behind. you just have to do a rewrite. You know, 4 to 5 years, you have to do a rewrite. Otherwise, certain systems don't get supported anymore. It's just moving too fast. So that's, we're in our basically, you know, third-ish rewrite, third, fourth rewrite.
Well, I will say that for me, the knowledge base that you have in WRMT has been really helpful. And as far as customer service, you in particular, Rachel, were amazing when I was trying to get for Minnesota, the Minnesota State Report pulled, be able to be pulled easier. So that you worked with our state permit specialist, and that has... That alone has made my life a lot easier. So, you know, it's all about me. So, so I want to thank you for that because that helped a lot. But yeah, customer service, you were, Johnny on the spot. You were right there helping us out. And it was, that was wonderful.
That actually, thank you. That reminded me, we are creating a new way to do our support. Ooh. So yes, we found the software, and when they found out what they did, they're like, okay, you can use it for free. We're like, great. So it's called Help Scout. And what it is going to do, like it's still going to be very, very similar, but we created this massive tutorial system, and it's like, you have to go here, and then maybe people will see the tutorials. There's some videos and you have to read it, but still, I think people are just very used to asking me questions. So they just are going to ask me how to do something instead of looking it up, which I understand. It's a lot quicker. So what this is like on a lot of other softwares, at the bottom right of your screen, there'll be like a little chat box or something like that. And you can click it and it will pull up like the most common asked questions. So if it's like how to delete a patient, which is the number one asked question, there'll be a little blurb right there. They'll explain it, you know, right away. And it'll be very easy to look up, you know, just like a lot of these other softwares out there, it'll be very easy to look up your question if you have it. And if you can't find it, then you can message us. And the message will come to me and this, you know, new person that we hired, Misty. And then we can together like work through it. And in the background, it really helps us manage sort of the, you know, the who's going to answer it, how, when they're going to answer it. Because at this point, if I'm getting like 10 messages a day and I got to go to Devin with this one, and, you know, it's a lot and it's cumbersome, and we want to make it like much more efficient so I can get back to people a lot quicker when they have simple questions. So We're going to, when we do launch 4.0, we actually may launch it a little sooner than that so that we can pilot it and make sure that we have our systems down so we can help people. Mm-hmm. But it's just going to be an easier way for us to manage asking questions. And hopefully some people can, like the really simple questions, they can just kind of find out on their own and just read it. Because I'm basically, what I do is I just copy the information and I just paste it in when I answer them, you know, like, so. If you can read it on your own, I'd appreciate it. And I can help people with the really complicated stuff, like their state reports.
That's right. And of course, you probably already thought of this, but that, you know, if there's an icon down on the bottom, it has to be the little bookworm.
Oh, that's a good idea. I wonder if we can do that. That's a really good idea.
Yeah,
I wonder if they'll give us that option.
Oh my God, I love that logo. I think I've mentioned that once or twice.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you would like to add besides, I want people to know how to find Wormd? How do you find it?
Wormd.org. WRMD.org.
WRG, I love it. Easy. We'll also put that in the show notes so that people have easy access to kind of explore a little bit and see what Wormd is all about. Is there anything else you would like to add?
Yeah, I think I have two things. One thing I'd like to just mention some of the less known extensions or features that people might actually not know about that already exist. I feel like Wormd is sort of a process. You use it your first year and you use like a little bit and get used to it. And then the next year you might pick up one or two more things that you can do and so forth. So I just wanted to make sure that people knew that these existed if they wanted to use it. If they already use Wormd. So, you know, we have the Cornell Birds of the World is available, you know, on the dashboard, and you can, for 4.0, we should be able to have the actual species. So you click on the species name and it should link to actually Birds of the World in that species. We're working on that. And that was, you know, thanks to a very generous donor who, you know, worked that sort of deal for us. So, you know, thank you to them. We also have a hotline extension, so you can take the hotline calls. That's another thing that 4.0 will have, is it will have the ability, if you are using hotline, you can automatically just say, turn this hotline call into a patient. So all the hotline and the patient can then be connected. So a patient can have the hotline contact and then all the information about the rescuer or all that information can like just go bloop and be into that patient as you're creating it.
I can't wait for that.
I know, I can't either.
Wow.
It's probably one of the number one requested features. Like, can't you just, it's like, yes, we can, but we have to do that in the new one. We can't do it as things are. There's an expense extension. So if you're kind of like expense nerdy, you can record, you know, medications and transport and any of that kind of stuff per patient and actually look at sort of how much it costs per patient or per species or anything like that recorded in there. It's very similar to how you do QuickBooks. Obviously, you can attach photos. We also do imports from past records. So like if you have like an Excel spreadsheet of like records, we can import those. We have records back to 1979 in the database. So we've been importing a lot of past stuff.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up because that's for years and years and years. That's exactly what I did was Excel. And I'm like, okay, well, eventually I'll input them into Wormd, but this will be a lot easier. Okay, then.
So there's on our features page, there's an import information and it tells you all the fields that we can import and how we do it. And, you know, for small imports, we'll do it for free. For anything larger, depending on how much resource and energy I put into it, then we just appreciate a donation after the fact. Because it is a lot of sitting at a spreadsheet and making sure all the data is perfect. And only us at this point, we used to have it so that other people can import. Now it's only us that can import so that we can manage the data very carefully that goes into Wormd. So we also have state and federal reports. We have autofill fields, you know, custom fields. I mentioned the oil spill extension, and you know, we're constantly updating things. So I just wanted to mention those things. I think what I've discovered and what's really important and sort of along my journey and where we are right now, I'm kind of like in between doing, you know, like I consider myself a wildlife rehabilitator, even though I'm not handling animals anymore, mm-hmm. but I know the community, like I love this community. And I'm also now working with universities and agencies and like very large nonprofit organizations. And it's a little intimidating. So I'm kind of in this weird sort of in-between stage of, I am representing wildlife rehabilitators on a very large scale, like very kind of, I won't say important people, but important people that we're starting to get recognized by, you know, wildlife rehabilitators rock, you know, and they should be recognized as like the true rock stars that they are. And, you know, I think only together and working together can we accomplish what we can accomplish way more than we can as individuals. And that's why sort of the standardized data working across and working with other organizations is so important. And the world is starting to look at us like they've never before. Agencies are looking at us. You know, the feds are looking at what we do and our data. And we kind of have to like, this is a time where we have to like show our worth and like prove our importance. And we have to be exceptionally professional at this time. We have to present ourselves as like, even though we're kind of all tree huggers and conservationists and we want to do like cute little photos of foxes or whatever, like we can't, we have to be professional because we're being looked at. And it's the only way that we can be the advocates that the wildlife desperately need. Like we have to raise our standards right now because wildlife is in danger. And, you know, we're in danger of losing our jobs because wildlife is just hit so hard right now. So
totally agree. We could go down the rabbit hole of the sixth wave extinction and, you know,
not now,
but we won't do that because what you said was just a beautiful way to kind of wrap up here is that wildlife rehabilitators are rock stars. We've been trying to prove our worth for a long time. We do need to be professional and step up at this time because the wildlife need us. And we're part of that conservation story and wormed in these databases, these electronic databases play their role in a very big way, to help us achieve that. So, Rachel, I want to thank you so much. This has been so fun. Someone who knows nothing, I mean, except for I use Wormed, but really know nothing about all the stuff that goes into it and everything. This has been a great 45 minutes or whatever we've been spending. It's gone by so fast. So thank you. And we will, for everyone listening, we'll put links and stuff in the show notes. So you'll have that and get to see the great little logo and everything. But for now, that's what we got. It's a wrap. And I will be talking to you guys soon. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Wildlife Rehabilitation from Rescue to Release Season 2. That was Rachel Avila, co-founder and creator of Wormed. Wildlife Rehabilitation from Rescue to Release is a production of Partners for Wildlife, working hand in hand with wildlife rehabilitators and veterinarians to improve the welfare of orphaned, ill, and injured wildlife. Our executive producer is me, Gail Buell. I'm the Partnership Coordinator for Partners for Wildlife at the University of Minnesota College of Veterinary Medicine's Raptor Center. To learn more about the Raptor Center and Partners for Wildlife, visit raptor.umn.edu. Our producer is Kirk Clocky. Special thanks to our guest Rachel Avila, Wormed, Partners for Wildlife, and the Raptor Center at the University of Minnesota College of Veterinary Medicine. And that's our show. Hope you'll join us again next time.